Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, heute wieder einen ganz wundervollen Interviewgast für dich hier im Podcast zu haben. Und zwar ist es Geshe Michael Roach. Vielleicht kennst du ihn schon, er ist der Autor unter anderem von dem Buch Der Diamantenschneider und Karmic Management. Er hat insgesamt über 20 Bücher geschrieben, ist der erste US-Amerikaner gewesen, der den Titel eines buddhistischen Meisters bekommen hat, Geshe. Und es ist ein wundervoller Mensch, der uns beibringt oder der uns zeigt, wie wir Spiritualität und Business miteinander verbinden können und wie wir die buddhistischen Prinzipien auf das eigene Business anwenden können. Und nicht nur das, sondern grundsätzlich, was eigentlich so das Erfolgsgeheimnis des Lebens ist aus buddhistischer Sicht. Und dieses Interview ist unglaublich inspirierend. Geshe Michael Roach ist ein wahnsinnig warmherziger, inspirierender, intelligenter Mensch. Ich bin ganz inspiriert von diesem Gespräch und von diesem Interview und ich freue mich so sehr, es jetzt mit dir teilen zu können. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch und wie immer findest du bei mir auf YouTube und bei mir auf der Webseite die Übersetzung zu diesem Interview auf Deutsch. Das heißt, du kannst dort dann einfach mitlesen und es dir trotzdem anhören. Und ich freue mich einfach riesig, es mit dir teilen zu können. Und es gibt auch ein ganz besonderes Angebot, falls du gerne an seinem Seminar teilnehmen möchtest. Er ist am 11. und 12. November in Berlin in Deutschland und gibt ein Seminar. Und es gibt ein besonderes Angebot von mir für dieses Seminar, wenn du da gerne daran teilnehmen möchtest. Ich selber profitiere davon nicht, sondern ich habe das einfach nur für dich möglich machen können, wenn du da gerne dabei sein möchtest. Findest du in dem Podcast einen Link, wo du draufklicken kannst und dann bekommst du dieses Special-Angebot von dem Podcast für das Seminar von Geshe Michael Roach im November. Und ja, ich freue mich, wenn wir dann uns da sehen. Ich werde selber auch daran teilnehmen, freue mich sehr darauf. Und jetzt geht's aber direkt los mit dem Interview mit Geshe Michael Roach. Ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude. I am so happy and grateful to have a very, very special guest in the podcast today. It's Geshe Michael Roach. Thank you so much for your time. It's my pleasure to have you here in the podcast. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've heard a lot about your show and your podcast, and it's amazing. And it's a big honor for me to talk with you today. Yeah.
Thank you so much. So the question I very often start the interview with is, what are you most grateful for today?
You know, in our tradition, Buddhist tradition, Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we're very grateful for our teachers. And I'm especially grateful for my whole life. I've had very great teachers. And I think that's the thing I'm most grateful for. Yeah.
Do you have one teacher in particular that you would say that you learned something from that gives you something for today? Especially, just give me 1 second because my baby phone is on and I hear my son.
Just one second. Okay. That's also a teacher.
Yeah, it's actually, he's my biggest teacher, but it's very difficult for me to concentrate when I hear him crying. Then it's my brain that doesn't work anymore.
No, it's a good teacher. Is it your first child?
Yeah,
it's
my first child. He's five months. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. So what would you say was one teacher to you where you learned something from that inspires you maybe actually today, right now?
I have two main teachers. Mm-hmm. One was a Tibetan Lama, mm-hmm. and I lived with him for over 25 years. Yeah. And he was in a debating contest just before he left Tibet, and he beat 15,000 other monks. He was the number one in Tibet, I would say, that year. And so he was a very great teacher and a very compassionate man. And he pushed me very, very hard. Then I had another teacher who's my high school girlfriend. And we met each other when we were 16 or 17. And we used to go to a church garden. And I learned amazing things from her in the garden. I even wrote a book about it. We still have this relationship. It's been 50 years. Wow. This year. And she's coming over today, just after this talk. And she's always taught me a lot. So sometimes I think they're the same person in a different body.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And if you would have to reduce what you learned from her, maybe in one sentence, what would it be?
You know, honestly, she took me away from this worldly pursuit of position or fame and forced me to pay attention to taking care of people. And she still does that every day. And I think that's really been her function. I remember one day when I was 17, I got a telegram from the president of the United States. And it said, "You've been selected to come to the White House and talk to me," you know. And then I remember she was so unimpressed. And she didn't care about it at all. And she was like, "Yeah, but are you going to take care of your mom?" You know, and she still does that. Yeah. Her name's Veronica. Yeah.
It's beautiful. And I think it's so important to stay down to earth, whatever happens in the outside. Yeah, that's so nice. And when you said your first teacher was a Tibetan monk, for everyone who's listening right now and who's like, okay, how did it happen that your first teacher was a Tibetan monk? You worked with over 25 years, you said. Can you bring us to the moment where you first met and who you were by then? Like, what was your life back then when you first met him?
So I was a really good student. I was from a poor family in Western United States, a small city. And I got accepted to Princeton University. And then while I was there, my mom got cancer. And we were very, very close. And one of the students in the class was from India in one of my classes. And he convinced me that I wouldn't learn at Princeton University what I needed to know to help my mom. And he said, "You should go to India right now." And so I just left. I just went. And I was wandering around looking for a teacher, and I finally met the Dalai Lama, and I brought my mom there. She was dying, and my teachers taught her how to die, and what to do, and what to expect, and how to make the journey. And she spent, I think, 3 months there, and we met His Holiness. And I said, "You know, I have to take my mom back to America. She's going to pass away." And he said, "Well, there's a teacher there that I would recommend for you." And it turns out he's an hour from Princeton. So it was very funny. And I didn't know about him. And he was serving a community of Asian refugees. And so I met him. And I remember I was very excited to meet him. And I was, you know, nervous, and I went to his house, and the first meeting I remember, he was sitting on the bed, and I was sitting on the floor, and I said, "I'd like you to be my teacher," and I gave him my bank book, and I said, "I give you everything," and he took the bank book and he threw it at me. And he said, "I don't need your money, you know, but if you work hard, I'll teach you," you know. So he was really tough. Yeah.
And when you said he was very tough, in which way did he teach you? Like, what was the thing that was so tough about it?
I was used to being the best student in the class and all this stuff. And you know, I still try to impress people. It's something I like to do. It's probably my main thing. And then he would be totally unimpressed by anything I did. So it didn't matter if I memorized many pages, or if I debated in his language, or if I translated hundreds of pages. And he was never satisfied. He would never praise me. And I became a Geshe. This is the first one in our monastery in 600 years from another country. And he still didn't praise me. And I think it was really good for me that I had a teacher like that. And he just kept he kept pushing me and demanding that I be a better person. But it was hard. It wasn't easy. The traditional teachers, he was probably the last generation from Tibet. And he was very, very traditional and very. I remember he was accepted to learn English at a university in Washington, D.C. And we went together and we went down and I drove him to class. And the first night he came home and we were staying in some Buddhist temple there from Sri Lanka. And he handed me all his homeworks and he said, "Okay, you do the homework." And I said, "No, in America, the student has to do the homework." And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, "I'm your teacher. I'm your teacher," you know. And he had been in a car accident. And his voice box was damaged. So he sounded just like Star Wars. "I'm your teacher. I tell you to do my homework. You have to do my homework," you know. And that was like our first fight. But he was very tough but his love was immense. His love for me was immense. So I think you're going to be a mom, right? And I think you'll find out that I think what I found out from him was that to really take care of someone, sometimes you have to be tough on them. And so I think he got more out of me by being tough than praising me. Yeah,
it's interesting. Love has very many different ways of expressing itself. Yes, and it's really, and because the question I had while you were telling it was like, what did you think was his biggest wish for you when you say that he was so tough on you?
He did something to me. I was with him for, about 10 years. And then one day he said, "You start a business." And I said, no, I had money from my grandmother died and left me some money. And he said, "You start a business." And I said, "Well, I don't need money." And he said, no, I don't want you to sit in the monastery your whole life. I want you to see real people." And then he forced me to start a business in New York. And I didn't want to go to New York, and I didn't want to start a business, and I don't like business. And he said, "Start a business." And I said, "Well, what business?" And he said, "Diamond business." And then I'm like, diamond is the most, you know, corrupt blood diamond. You know, these are all terrible people. I don't want to start a diamond business. And he said, "I'm your teacher." So we started a little business with three people, and we had three diamonds. And then later we became the largest diamond jewelry company in the world. And we were doing 300,000 diamonds a day. And he forced me to, he took an ancient scripture called Diamond Cutter Sutra. And he said, "You use this book for your business plan. And you see if you can make a business from this book." And so it was a big challenge for me. And that, you know, looking back, after he died, I realized he really loved me. He wanted me to learn to use Buddhism in the real world and not just in a monastery.
That's amazing. Okay, let's go back to the day when he told you you should start a diamond business. I just imagine you've been living in a monastery. Yes, probably you live there. And now is the day you go out of the monastery. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to that day. Who were you back then? How did you feel? Have you been afraid? What were your thoughts if we would go back to that moment?
So I was in a small monastery near New York. It's about 2 hours from New York, near Princeton. And this is all Asian refugees from Mongolia. And they are Tibetan Buddhists. So they had some temples there. And I was studying with him. And then I would go I was doing my Geshe studies in India, which is where our monastery is one of the three main monasteries of Tibet. It has about, right now it's about 3,000 monks. And so I would go there for study, come back, help him, go back. And then he said, you know, go to New York. So, and I have to come home every night. I'm a monk. So it's a 2-hour drive to New York on the bus, and it's 2 hours back. So it's 4 hours on the bus every day. And in those days, it was legal to smoke on the bus. So the bus was filled with cigarette smoke, yeah. And it was terrible. And I remember the first day I was so nervous and scared, and I was so worried that I couldn't do it, you know. And I didn't have any clothes. I just wore robes. So he took me to the store in America, Goodwill store. This is where they sell the dead people's clothes. And he bought me a suit for $7. And he said, you wear this. And Tibetan's idea of color is pretty bad. So it was like orange shirt and a black coat. So I'm on the bus and I'm really innocent. I don't know anything. Then I just started working for a diamond company. We actually started a diamond company. I was very nervous and I wasn't sure I wanted to do it. It took me a long time to understand his plan, you know.
Have you been angry or something, like where you're asking, why is he doing that to me?
We have this thing in English called passive aggressive, right?
Yeah.
And this is where the teacher says, you have to do this. And in Tibet, if you say no, you're out. They just throw you out. And he threw out about 50 students before me. And so I was nervous, you know, and there's all these ways to delay what your teacher tells you. You just delay and delay and delay. And I delayed for as long as I could. And so there's a kind of tradition in the monastery. If you don't want to do something that your teacher says, you can only delay. You can't really say no. And if you say no, they will just throw you out. And so finally, one day he gave a very beautiful teaching at a university in America, I remember. And I was his driver. So, you know, I on the way home, I said, oh, that was such a beautiful talk. I'll do anything you want, you know. And he said, okay, you start a business, you know. You go tomorrow, you know, you go to New York. And I didn't understand for a long time why he made me do it. But now we have this Diamond Cutter Institute. We teach 30,000 people every year. We're in 20 countries, 35 cities around the world. And we teach people to be spiritual in their normal life and in their family life and in their business life. And we teach them how to use spiritual things to be successful. Yeah. We teach about, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 Muslims every year come to our talks. And we teach the Communist Party in China. We teach the Congress of Mexico, which are all Catholic. I think there's 50 groups in Israel. We tried to make it. I think the gift he gave me was that it's not only not wrong to be spiritual and to be successful, but maybe if you're really spiritual, it would be better to be successful, and then you could help more people.
So. That's beautiful. And this is exactly what I want to talk to you about, because I think this is one of the, let's call it, maybe problems people have in the head, that especially mm-hmm. in Germany, it's very often, I can either be spiritual or successful, but yeah. I cannot be successful and spiritual, especially not with money, that it's yeah. like two separate things. And I love this about your book. I have the German version, mm-hmm. so the Diamant Schneider, it's in German. And I also read Karma Management and mm-hmm. Karmic Management. And I think it's so beautiful how you also describe it in your book. You talk about this the three principles, right? Mm-hmm. Of this three Buddhist principles of being in mm-hmm. business. And maybe we could talk about that that maybe you can explain a little bit how what they are and how we can apply them to business.
Well, I like to tell this story. I was in Germany a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I know.
I was in Austria, in Vienna, and people were asking me about this subject, about success and spirituality. And I gave an answer to someone's question. They asked me, how does it go together? And I said, well, when I was a young child, my mom took me to church a lot. And I really enjoyed the church. And I remember distinctly, she told me, get on your knees and pray. And I said, well, what's pray, mom? What's it mean? And she said, pray for everyone, you know? And I said, everyone? And she said, yeah, you pray for everyone. And I started, you know, and I remember the place. I go there sometimes, even now, that church, that same seat. And I remember the seat. And I remember, I tried to pray for everyone. And I started with my mom, and then I did my dad, and then I started on my brothers, and then I did my aunt. And then she shook my shoulder. She said, okay, we have to go, you know. And I said, but I'm not done. I only prayed for like six people. And she said, mom, you said to pray for everyone. And she said, well, you know, you can't really pray for everyone one by one. You can't really do that, you know. And then I think as we get older, we lose that dream that we could do something to help everyone. And now I suddenly, in the last few years, I finally understand, I think, what my teacher was thinking about it. And the first thing was that the only way to be successful is to make someone else successful. And that's the principle behind all success, personal, family, or your business. And so it's not a nice thing to do. It's the only way to make a lot of money. You can make some money without doing that. You can make some success. But if you want to make the largest diamond company in the world, or we have a project for 31 years, we are training refugees to type the ancient books of Buddhism. There's 300,000 books we have to finish. We're working for 30 years. We finished about 6%. And it took about, I don't know, $10 million. And if you don't have money, you can't do that. You can't do things like this college that I'm sitting in right now. It costs $3 million. And we train people from all over the world. But it takes money to do that. But also, if it's correct that you can only make a lot of money by helping other people to be successful, then there's I have this strange idea of how I can do what my mom asked me to do. Because what we do is we train people to be successful, and we show them that they can only be successful by helping other people. Really successful. I'm talking, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So you can only do that by helping other people. And if you succeed by helping other people, then you become an example for other people. And then other people start to copy you. So then in my life, many, many people, the reason I wrote that book is the New York Times came to me and said, How did you build this company? How did you do it so fast? It's one of the fastest growing companies in the history of New York. And they said, how did you do it? And then I said, well, there's these principles that if you help other people be successful, then you will be. And it's very specific principles. It's very, there's a list of things you have to do. And, but if you do it, then people will come to you and ask you, how did you do it? And then they will try it. And if they succeed, then their friend will ask them, how did they do it? And then their friend will ask them, and their friend will ask them. And then in a way, you've prayed for the whole world.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I have one question about it, because what I see sometimes when I observe people and how people are in business, especially when you're not spiritual, or in, I say in the normal economy, sort of, who's not yet spiritual. I have the impression that people very often are actually afraid to do first something for someone else, because first they think, I have to take care of me. First, I have to have everything I want. Like, it's a very egocentric, maybe, perspective on the world. And I also think it's, as we are not trained in thinking the way you said, that our ego is like really are like confused. It's like, okay, how can I first help all the others before sort of I help myself, which is actually you help yourself by helping others. But how can we get out of this egoic perspective, maybe, or the fear that comes up when you say, okay, help as many other people and then you will be successful?
I have a demonstration that I do. It comes from 2000 years ago. They used to use a shell from the ocean, a conch shell. And I use a pen, and you've probably seen it before. But I like to do it because it explains how it works. So it's 2 minutes, okay?
Yeah,
and please. This is an old tradition. This is thousands of years old. And the teacher will say, what is this thing? And then the student will say, what?
It's a pen. Or it's a shell. Yeah,
it's a pen. And then I'll say, if a dog comes in here and I show this to the dog, what will they do with it?
They will bite it.
Then there's it's 18 questions. It's a tradition. It's 2000 years old. Then does the dog see a pen?
No.
When they look at this, they don't. They see something to chew. Then you tell the student, okay, if I put it here on the computer, and all the dogs go out of the room and all the people go out of the room, at that time, is it a pen or is it a chew toy? Which one?
Nothing.
Yeah. And everyone in the world will go like this, you know, nothing. Yeah. That's the Buddhist idea of emptiness. Yeah. So that's the real meaning of emptiness. Emptiness doesn't mean close your eyes and don't think about anything, or everything's black, or these are not emptiness. When the dog goes out, when the people go out, and it's just there, and it's kind of waiting to be something, and that's called potential, or emptiness. And then when the human comes back in the room, and they look at it, it changes and it becomes
a pen again.
A pen. So when it becomes a pen, if the dog came in, what would it become?
The chewing thing.
Yeah. So the next question is very famous. So does the pen, when I see pen, does it come from me or does it come from the pen?
It comes from me.
It must come from me. And yes, because the dog doesn't see a pen. And, you know, really, once you get someone to agree to that, then they can be successful. So somehow the pen is coming from me. And then I always tell people, but we're not going to positive thinking school. This is not positive thinking school. You know, I'm not trying to say the world's coming from you, think positive, try to think of success, it will come. Look, everybody wants success. If positive thinking made success, then everyone would be successful, because everybody wants it. So it's coming from my mind, but I don't, and this could be a beautiful husband, or this could be a beautiful child, or this could be my back doesn't hurt today. You know, why does it come from me? How does it come from me? Then we say there's a seeds in your mind, tiny seeds in your mind, millions of seeds in your mind, and each one opens at a rate of 65 per second. So seeds are opening in my mind and pictures are coming out. So the parts are here, but they're not a pen. And then a picture of a pen comes out of my mind and it covers it. And I see a pen and the dog has a chew toy piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they see a chew toy and it's real. And their chew toy is real, and my pen is real, and I can write with it, and it will write. So it's coming from me, but it's real. And there's four steps, ancient steps. She is Sampa Jora Tartuk from these ancient books. Can you pull down one of those? Anyone, top one. Yeah, so these are typical book, and these were made in the days before paper. So they were put on palm leaf, and they have no binding. You have to, you know, it's like this, yeah. Wow. And there's no binding. And in these books, they say there's four steps to plant a seed. Number one, called she. It means, what do you want? What do you want to achieve, you know? And some people say, personally, I don't want to be rich, but I want to be independent. I want enough money to do what I like. I want enough money to go to LA and hang out if I want to. And so that's number one. Or I want a nice relationship. I want a beautiful family. Or I want some good health. I want energy. I don't want to feel old. I don't want wrinkles all over. I want to feel young, you know, energy. And inside, I want to be totally peaceful, you know, like a monk all day. And then the highest goal is I would like everyone to have these four things, you know. I dream that everyone could have these things. So in this system, to plant the seed, first of the four steps, what do you want today, you know? What's your goal today? Then let's say let's say I want to start a business. Okay, mm-hmm. I want to start a business. And so that's number one. You have to decide what you want. Number two, you cannot plant a seed. And by the way, the Sanskrit name for seed is vasana or sanskara. In Tibetan, they call bakchak or sabun. And in English, you can say karma. It's the same thing. So the seed, you cannot plant it without another person. It's not possible. It's totally impossible. So it's like an echo or a basketball. You must plant it with another person. You cannot plant it by yourself. And so second step is I must find another person who wants to start a business. So that's the second step. I identify my karmic partner. And this is called Sampa in the ancient language. So she is Sampa. And then Jorwa means I have to do something for 1 hour every week to help them start their business for free. You know, I have to give them my time. And what you said is true. You know, people say, no, I'm starting a business. I don't have time. But that's what a gift is. A gift is something that's valuable to you, that you don't have time. So the most precious thing you can give when you're starting a business is an hour of your time every week. And so you give them an hour every week. And let's say I help this person do their podcast. I help them set up the computer link and I teach them how to do their Skype. And, you know, I do all this stuff to help them to start their own podcast. Every time I talk to them, every word I say to them, they hear it, you know, like here's how you turn on Skype. But I also hear my own words. They come this way into my own ear. And the ancient books say it makes an impression on your mind. The sound of your own talking in the 1 hour that you are helping this other person, it makes impressions on your mind. And then that becomes a karmic seed within 2 hours. The fourth step, which is really cool, and that's the most important one, is that karmic seed in your mind can stay without opening for 100 years. You see? So you have to put water on them, you know. And this is the big secret, you know, that people don't know. And I think if people who listen to your podcast this is the most important thing, is that we all do good things. We all help other people. We don't make $200 million company. It's because we don't know the fourth step, which is called tartuk. And it means be happy about what you did this afternoon. So when you go to bed, this my lama taught me over and over. And when you go to sleep, as you put your head on the pillow, it's human nature to think about all your problems, because we're tired, which is why we're going to sleep. In this system, you have to think about all the good things you did today. So it's a meditation. Meditation means fighting with your mind. Your mind wants to think about your problems. And at night, they get big. So meditation means to fight against your mind and say, no, we're going to think about this person we helped today to start their business, you know, and we're going to make a plan for tomorrow about how to help them more. And we're going to be happy about ourselves in a good way, in a healthy way, not a pride would be. Pride says, I'm the best other person helper in Berlin. There's nobody in Berlin like me who can help other people. That's pride. That's not good. But to say today I helped someone for free to start their business, and I'm happy. And I'm happy that this is the way I'm going to build my business. I'm happy for the new system also. And then the seed, there's a principle, ancient principle, very cool, called Lungsem Jupa Chipa. And it means where the mind goes, your prana also goes. The prana in your body is linked to your the movement of your thoughts. So when you think about a good seed you planted today, it literally heats up from the extra prana. And it opens faster. And then your own business will suddenly start to grow. And we doubled every 18 months for 19 years. And you can imagine trying to hire whole new staff every 18 months, double your staff every 18 months. And it comes from this, we call coffee meditation, because my teacher said, drink some coffee and go to bed. And I'm like, Lama, it's not going to work. You know, it's going to keep me up. He said, no, it'll make your mind clear for a few minutes. And we call it coffee meditation. So if you do that, then you'll be super successful. Like that.
Okay, let me try to put it together again. So the first step is to get clear what you want, right? Mm-hmm. To get really clear on what you want.
Today.
What you want today. What you want today.
It might change tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay, so get clear on what you want today. We had the example, I want to build a business. Then you said, find someone you can do it with, like your karmic business partner.
Yeah.
Then do 1 hour something for this person today.
Yeah.
And then the fourth step, the secret is go to bed and feel good about, like in a positive way, feel good about that you helped someone today. Is that correct?
Perfect.
Okay,
perfect.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Someone asked me a question. They said, well, what if this person wants to start the same business as I do?
Yes, that's a good question. Yeah.
What if they're my competition? They're going to become my competition. Like in the diamond business, there's a rule that you don't teach other people to cut diamonds, because they become your competition, you know, and it's very difficult to get into diamond cutting business. No one will teach you because you will become competition. But in this system, the seed that you plant with your competition is much more powerful and your business will grow much faster. And the market will expand faster than both of you, you see? So if you are the most successful podcast person in Germany and you teach younger women, for example, to do the same thing you do and be your competition, the market will expand faster than 100%, you see? And you'll both become successful. And because the market is coming from you, And it's very beautiful. So the logical, we just wrote a book in China with a very famous Chinese businessman. We both wrote a book called The Death of Global Competition. And the idea is to, I had a chance to speak to some leaders in America at a big conference. There were 1,200 of them. And China had requested to buy an American oil company. And the Congress of America was blocking it. You know, they said, no, no, we don't want China to be more successful than America. And someone asked me a question, what do you think we should do? And I said, well, if this pen thing is correct, then the best way to get more energy in America is to give our energy to China. Yeah. You know, let them buy the oil company, you know. And but, you know, I taught them the pen for 2 hours first. And eventually they allowed the sale. Wow. Now I'll ask you a cool question. What's the largest oil producer in the world right now?
BP or something? I don't know.
Is it Saudi Arabia? Is it Iran? Is it Venezuela? It's the United States.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. They found new ways, new technology, and you can say it's maybe a result of this vote. I don't know. I like to think so.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think it's so interesting. I mean, I 100% believe in what you say because I live it and I have proof from my life that it actually works to 1,000%. But especially with the competition, I have the impression that we are very often guided by fear instead of our inner guidance system, which is, I think, actually based on love and based on harmony. And I think this is where we come from. But very often then we get we learn to be in fear. So what would you say? How can we get out of this fear of helping someone else? The fear of losing. I mean, the fear is actually I help you and I lose, sort of, right? That's the fear. Yeah. So what would you say? How can we get out of that?
You know, I encourage people what I realized my Lama did to me was he sent me to New York as an experiment. And the company was my laboratory, you know, and I just didn't trust him. You know, I was angry and I was upset, and it took a lot of self-control to listen to him. And I doubted him for years. But what we tell people is just try it. You know, do an experiment in your life, do a laboratory experiment. You know, pick a small goal. Like, I want my income to go up 50%. In 2019, or I want to find a new boyfriend, or I want my headaches to go away, something small, and then try these four steps. Try it for 6 weeks, you know, and if it's correct, you will get what you planned, you know. If the system is correct, it will prove itself to you. And if it's not correct, the worst thing that happened is you help someone else. Yes,
that's, you know, beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. I think that's a really good approach to just get outside your own way, like out your own way, and just try it on. And it's funny because I actually did that 6 years ago. I started Project Laura.
What is that?
Project Laura was... I have been in a very difficult relationship. We broke up and everything has been horrible. And then I said, okay, I start now 1 year Project Laura, and I will do everything to make me feel good again so that I get into my power and everything. So I learned everything about self-helping tools, meditation, all these things. And then I found out, okay, it worked for me. And now I'm going to share it with the entire world. And now I share it with the entire world. And this is actually where all my success comes from. So it's very funny because I actually called it like Project Laura. I would just try it out. Like, what do I have to do to feel good with me, with myself? Yeah.
That's great. We had a lady, we just got back from Japan. We went to Vienna from Japan and China. And there's a woman. How old is she? I feel she's 30 years old or something. Yeah. 30-ish. She's about 30, and she has an online community in China of 2 million people. Oh. And she's like you. You should meet her.
Yeah, and, sounds great.
And I asked her, she's so young and she's so successful. And I said, well, how did you do that? And she said, I read your book like 5 years ago. And I didn't have anything. And I just started helping other people to build online communities. And now she has 2 million people. And it's beautiful. And it's a very beautiful. And it's frustrating for me because I haven't used my book that much that other people do. But it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to meet people like that. Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's really nice. Yeah. I have one more question.
Okay.
As you are, Geshe, you're the master of Buddhism, like you're very much into the topic. And one question I get asked very often is about karma. I mean, we talked about it already. Could you put what karma is into a short definition that everyone understands what karma is and how to use it?
You know, when we teach around the world, in many countries, like we were in Dubai, we gave a program for, actually it was a Diamond Producers Congress in the world. And one of the sheikhs was there, and we could not use the word karma. And in there's countries where we cannot use spiritual language, and we have to be very careful not to use it. So the word is on my mouth, and I'm trying to say another word, and
like,
then I thought, and I realized it's seeds. It's a seed in your mind. When you help someone else, or when you hurt someone else, you hear yourself. Or you see your own body move, and that movement is recorded in your mind. It makes an impression in your mind, and then that becomes a seed in your mind, and that seed's name is karma.
Okay, beautiful.
So the text says, "Lele jikte nasoke dini sambandam deche sambayikile no deche ludangakile." Very, very famous. This is 2,000 years ago. All the worlds of this universe have been created by karma. Raw karma is anytime you think of anything. Raw karma is thinking, like I would like to help this person. It's raw karma, more powerful. Semba yikileno, deche ludangakile means. Then that triggers you to say something or to do something. And then when you hear yourself think, or you see yourself move, or you hear your words to help another person, they make the impression on your mind. And that's karma. That becomes karma. But there's two kinds of karma. And one is called a watermelon seed on the day you planted it. You know, and nothing's happening. And then one is called watermelon seed on the day that the sprout comes up. And between those two is the water or the sunlight. And that is being happy about yourself for helping other people. And without that water, the seed can stay there for a long time and it will never. That's why some good people don't become successful. They don't have this appreciation of themselves, healthy appreciation. Yeah. So that becomes like the best spiritual practice. Then in my mom's prayer question, you know, how am I going to help the whole world? Well, if I tried to use this pen thing and I try to help someone else to get what I want, and if it works, then I become a teacher automatically. I don't have to say anything. People will come to me and ask me, well, how do you do that? And so in theory, I can become virus. You know, if I become successful, if people look at me and say, you're happy, you have as much money as you want, you have financial independence, and you have great meditation. How do you do that? You know, then in theory, you can, you are doing a prayer for everyone on the, on the, on this planet. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. I have one final question I ask every of my interview guests. And the question is, imagine it's the last day of your life. You lived a beautifully happy life. You get really, 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 really old. It's the last day of your life. Mm-hmm. And everything you ever created is gone. Like, there has been a technical problem. No more courses from you. No more books. Nothing. Everything is gone. And I would come to you and I would say, Geshe Michael Roach, so sorry, got a little problem, everything is gone. but I have a white piece of paper and a pen. And I would ask you to write down the three wisdom. If nothing else from you would be left on this planet, what would be three things you would like people to remember as your own three wisdoms you would write down on this paper?
Boy, I have to think. Yeah, that's a beautiful question. That's a beautiful question. I guess number one, that the world is coming from you. Number two, it comes from seeds that you plant by how you treat others. Okay. Number two, right?
Yeah.
And number three, don't forget to put water on your seeds by being happy about all the good things you you are doing in your life. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. And we have a special announcement, sort of, because you will be coming to Germany again, right? In November.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So can you maybe just give a quick introduction about what your seminar is? Because I'm really sure many people listening right now really would like to come. So maybe you could just give a little bit of intro what the seminar is about in November in Berlin.
Yeah, sure. And I'm going to ask my vice president here to help me.
Yeah.
What are the dates? November?
Well, we think it's 9 and 10.
9 and 10, November 9 and 10 in Berlin. Yeah. And what happened was, we're in 20 countries, 35 cities, but the very first major talk we gave was in Germany, in Hamburg. So what's that place outside of Hamburg?
Yesterburg.
And so we have 12 levels of training. And every year we release one level. And this year we will release level 11. And we always release it in Germany because that's the first place we started. So we're going to release our level 11, which is about how to listen to your inner conversation. So I've been translating an ancient book called The Devil Debates with the Angel. And this is a lama who lived 400 years ago, and he wrote a book about listening to your own mind all day, listening to the good side and listening to the bad side. And I don't know in Germany, but in America, we have a picture. There's a devil and an angel, and the devil says, eat more chocolate. And the angel says, I'm getting fat. I want to get exercise, you know, and, so he wrote a beautiful book that I translated about 400 years ago about the inner conversation and how to develop it and how to get it stronger. Yeah. And so we'll be doing that in Berlin, 9th and
10th.
Yeah. Tentatively 9 and 10, but it'll
9th and 10. And I think we are going to do some kind of big conference with you guys somewhere, podcast people, tentatively. But apparently there's some big meeting there in Germany, and we might go to Wiesbaden for that.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. And for everyone who would like to come, of course, the link is in the show note. And I just thank you. I'm very much looking forward to see you in November in Berlin. And thank you for this beautiful conversation.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir dieses Interview richtig gut gefallen hat und dass du jetzt auch ganz beseelt und inspiriert bist und diese 4 Schritte, die Geshe Michael Roach auch vorgestellt hast, in deinem Leben implementieren kannst und ja, einfach diesen Shift auch immer mehr in deinem Leben integrierst, dass es darum geht, anderen zu helfen, und dann kommt der Erfolg ganz von selbst. Und wie gesagt, es gibt für das Seminar von Geshe Michael Roach im November ein Special-Angebot. Den Link dazu findest du bei mir in den Shownotes. Einfach draufklicken und dann kannst du dich dazu anmelden. Ich freue mich auch, dass ich dort sein werde. Bin super gespannt, da ganz viel lernen zu können. Und ja, wie immer freue ich mich natürlich riesig, wenn du mir deine Gedanken zu dieser Podcast-Folge dalässt, bei mir auf Instagram @LauraMarlinaSeiler in den Kommentaren. Was war für dich die wertvollste Erkenntnis? Wie wirst du das, was du gerade gelernt hast, gehört hast, implementieren? Was sind vielleicht Fragen, die du noch an Geshe Michael Roach hast? Und wie immer freue ich mich einfach riesig auf den Austausch und auf all eure tollen Gedanken zu dieser Folge. Das ist, finde ich, ein unglaublicher Mehrwert für mich, für die ganze Community, mit diesem Austausch, den wir uns da immer haben, und ich freue mich da über jeden einzelnen Kommentar und auch zu sehen, ja, wer den Podcast einfach hört. Und natürlich freue ich mich wie immer auch über deine Rezension hier auf iTunes, wenn du mir eine 5-Sterne-Rezension dalässt und mir schreibst, was der Podcast in deinem Leben schon bewegt hat. Es ist für mich ein riesiges Geschenk. Und ja, ich bin jetzt gerade noch in Los Angeles. Wir fliegen jetzt weiter nach Hawaii und da werden noch ganz viele tolle andere Interviews folgen. Und ich bin ganz beseelt, ganz glücklich, ganz dankbar. Und auf Instagram nehme ich dich auch mit ein bisschen auf diese Reise, die wir hier gerade machen. Und ich schicke dir jetzt eine riesengroße Umarmung. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.